This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, good Monday to you. Thanks for joining us, and I'm glad to be back after a week off for Thanksgiving. You know, I normally do not take a full week off for Thanksgiving. Usually we host it at the house, so I usually just work up until Wednesday, maybe take a day off or two. But I normally don't get a week, and boy, it was a wild week of Thanksgiving football games, and then this incredible rivalry Saturday that happened in college football. And then Sunday left us with yet a light NFL schedule because, you know, six teams played on Thursday and we got two teams playing tonight. So, you know, we didn't have a huge amount of games in the NFL, but what we had really was intriguing, and it really brings up a lot of questions as we kind of head towards the latter part of the season as to what teams are real and what teams still are teasing us just a little too much. But I'll tell you one team that isn't, and that's a team that I watched a lot yesterday because it was the local game in my market here in Nashville, and that's the New England Patriots. You know, we talk a lot about the Patriots, and we always kind of wonder how Bill Belichick was going to bounce back post-Tom Brady and Mac Jones and being a rookie quarterback, but this defense is spectacular. Now, listen, the Titans are down two wide receivers in Derrick Henry, no question about it. I mean, Ryan Tannehill only threw 93 yards yesterday in that game. But the way the Patriots are winning these games and the way that they are separating themselves from everybody that they're playing, it is becoming clear that there is another team to be put into the consideration in terms of a Super Bowl. Now, is it a stretch to say that Mac Jones could lead a Patriots team to a Super Bowl? You know, it may not have to be a rookie quarterback that guides this team to a Super Bowl. How about a defense with a defensive-minded coach, one of the greatest defensive minds of all time, guiding this team to a Super Bowl, much like they did the first time when Tom Brady was leading them against the Rams? It was an impressive performance, but that wasn't the only thing that stood out yesterday. And oh, by the way, outside of all the NFL news, we had two pieces of news in college football to dissect, including a shocker in Norman as Lincoln Riley is leaving Oklahoma to become the head coach at USC. All right, but coming up next, some of the things that happened in the NFL on Sunday has led us to scratch our heads and wonder, who exactly are these teams? So we'll go through them next. It's Tony D, Ron Culver. Hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It is Wake Up Call. Good Monday to you.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us again on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Yesterday, a light weekend in the NFL, again with three games on Thanksgiving. And, of course, you've got a Monday night game. So you've got four games that are gone. You had a couple teams on a bye. So a very light week, but
still enough to make me mad.
Right? Exactly. Especially given the way the Chargers won that game last weekend against the Steelers on Sunday night, where I thought that was a really, really fun game. That was a game as a Steeler fan. I wasn't really mad they lost because I know their defense was pretty banged up. And I was kind of, you know, obviously the Mike Williams touchdown bothered me, but I was like, you know, showed some fight and resilience. Okay, tough road win, you know, tough road game, a loss. Chargers looked pretty good. And then to go to Denver and let the Broncos not only win that game, but make a kind of allow them to jumble up the AFC West on the bottom of Kansas City right now. You got to get some separation right now.
Am I allowed to say that this is a sophomore slump?
Yeah, yes and no. This league does come back to you a little bit. He's still
fantastic.
Yeah, he's still fantastic. I think give it a couple of years per se, but like wait until he gets, you know, he'll get a rhythm down the road. Well, he'll play out of 17 games, he'll play 13 really good ones and, you know, a couple of dead ones, you know. That usually happens to everybody, but yeah,
that was annoying.
Yeah, I know.
Not even going to sugarcoat it, Chargers. Come on.
Because I don't know if Denver's good.
That, right? That's how I feel. I mean, they're kind of like the Vikings. I mean, they had this good record, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you beat the easy teams, you lose against the good ones, and it's, so now do I look at the Chargers and go, okay, are you guys not good? And do I got to put you in the same category as them?
It's the same thing with the Cincinnati Bengals, right? Cincinnati Bengals go to Baltimore, they win that game against the Ravens, and everybody, including me, was like, wow, different Cincinnati team, different Bengals team, different feel than any of the Andy Dalton years, any of even the Carson Palmer years, where they were pretty good. And yet, what do they do after that? They go lose to the Jets, then they lose to the Browns, right? But since then, what have they done? They beat the Raiders, and now they beat the Steelers. And not only they beat the Steelers, they crushed the Steelers. And they've won back-to-back games against Pittsburgh in a season for the first time since 2009. So are we back to Cincinnati is dangerous now? Is that what we're doing? Is that where we're at? Because I have yet to get a feel for anybody in this league yet. And I go back to what I was talking about at the top of the hour. The Patriots now are 8-4. They're 8-4. This is a team that struggled out of the gate. They look like a team that was like, well, Tom Brady and the Buccaneers will be good, but we're 1-3, and you know we're still trying to find ourselves, I guess. But since then, ripping off victories. They've now won 6 in a row. They've won 7 of 8. And the one game that they lost during that stretch was a close one to the Cowboys. I think that game was an overtime against the Cowboys. So since that loss to Brady, and again, that was a close game, they have roared through this league, right? In their last 4 games, and again, some of these teams are pretty bad. They've allowed 6, 7, 0, and now 13 points. Now, again, the Titans are a good team without Derrick Henry, of course, and then without A.J. Brown, out Julio Jones. They are down significantly offensively. But the way this team is playing, again, what do I do with the Patriots, right? Am I really to think that this collection of Patriots, with a rookie quarterback, they are better than Buffalo? Are they as good as Buffalo? I mean, we'll know when they play them next, you know, Monday night? Next Monday night on the 6th? I guess we're good, right? Is that where we're at with the New England Patriots? Are they back to bothering us as one of the dominant teams in the AFC?
I mean, that was quick. Just right? A little hiatus, like a TV show taking a break for a year.
Yeah.
Like Mandalorian.
Listen, I'm gonna say this right now. I know people love to play the Brady versus Belichick game. I get it. I've heard this for 20 years, right? Is it Belichick? Is it Brady? And even when Brady left, they still want to play the Brady-Belichick game, right? Yeah. Because if this guy takes this team to the Super Bowl, then and people are going to compare his run without Brady to Brady's run without the Patriots, right? Well, Brady went to Tampa and on a loaded team and led them to the Super Bowl while Belichick had a rookie quarterback. This is putting the cart way before the horse, but I will tell you, both are impressive if that actually happens. I mean, again, I'm not trying to be vanilla here, but, you know, Brady didn't go to Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay was an absolute lock to go to the Super Bowl with Brady on it. I mean, remember, they were a wild card team. They had to win 3 games on the road. One of them was at New Orleans against Drew Brees, for crying out loud. The other was an impossible game against, you know, Aaron Rodgers at Lambeau, where if there was crowd there, if there was a huge crowd there, it might have gone differently. Who knows? And then, of course, what did they have to do when they got to the Super Bowl? They had to face Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. So these are great accomplishments. But I buried this team when they were 2-4. Buried them at 2-4. And now they've won 6 straight. And now 8-4. And again, a good win against a beat-up Titans team, no less. But we'll see on the 6th on that game against, you know, in Buffalo against the Bills. Because now all of a sudden this has got some teeth. And by God, if you're Buffalo, this has got to drive you nuts. You can't even get a breather for 2 seconds?
Yeah, I mean, think about the beginning of the season, too. I mean, when they were annihilating teams, we just thought, just give them the division now.
Right.
Just give them the crown now. They're just running away with it. It's not even fun anymore.
And they can't breathe for a second. Now and Belichick's on their tail again.
Now we got one of the best Monday Night Football games in recent memory coming up.
I know. And
like the division titles on the line right now.
And you know what will happen? If Mac Jones develops into the kind of quarterback where he is good and this team remains good and they, you know, again, postseason team, playoff team, deep run playoff, maybe a few Super Bowls with this kid. People will look back on the 2020 year and go, yeah, COVID. Yeah, everything was falling apart back then. And that'll be just the blip in the radar and it will just be seen as a long Patriots dynasty with a couple of blips on it. Oh yeah, that was the year Brady got hurt in week one. Oh, that was the year COVID happened and Brady had left the team, but you know, everybody was a mess. Oh, yeah.
Eight guys were missing on defense. That's right. Why we were
all
that way.
All these guys opted out. No one was playing in front of full stadiums. It was a mess. If indeed this guy takes this team to the postseason, and if indeed this team makes a run at Super Bowls down the road, I don't know if it'll be this year, but it'll be down the road.
I'm saying this now. I think a postseason is certain.
I do too. At 8-4, it better be certain.
Yeah.
With an extra AFC team, they better make the playoffs at 8-4. That would be an epic collapse if they don't.
Yeah.
But again, look at Miami. Miami is 5-7. They're not technically out of this thing either.
Nah, that's the AFC. Well, there's only, what, two teams that
right?
are out? Texans and Jets. They played each other yesterday. And I was like,
are
that's
you
your
mediocre?
Season.
Come on to the AFC. Enjoy the playoff atmosphere. And you can be 5-7 and still have a shot. Right? I mean, give me a break. Like my friends want to like give me a hard time with the Steelers. Like, the Steelers are done. I'm like, not really. I don't like the way they're playing, but they're not done. I mean, they've got to scrounge up seven teams from this pile to make the postseason. Are you kidding me? Come on now. It could be anybody. They're all flying around at about 6-5, you know, 7-4. I mean, there's all sorts of teams in this conference that are just, you know, treading some water right now. But you're right. The Patriots should be going to the playoffs. And if they do, I don't care where they go. I don't care how far they go. And they could win the division. But again, if this guy has got this in groove, because this is the thing yesterday, because I watched that whole game yesterday. And this is the thing that was impressive about Mac Jones. And again, you could say this about it, about any of the games that they're winning, right? They don't ask him to do a lot, but the defense does such a good job that he does exactly what he needs to do, mm-hmm. right? They're not demanding that he goes out and get in a shootout with Patrick Mahomes or go out and get a shootout with anybody. What he does is he does exactly what they want him to do because the defense is so good. And so he's not throwing up these huge statistical numbers. But yesterday, 3-10 and 2 touchdowns, that's perfect. That's exactly what they're looking for. And they run the ball. And they play great defense. They turn the Titans turned the ball over 4 times yesterday. They've had like 17 takeaways in the last couple of games. It's remarkable how good they are. And that's just scratching the surface of some of the stuff that we'll get to coming up after what we saw in week 12 in the NFL. I'm starting to lose count.
That's that time of the year.
Yeah, it's that time of the year now. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. Also, we got to get into the college football news of Lincoln Riley going to USC. Was that a good move for him? It is USC, but he is leaving Oklahoma. We'll talk about that next as we continue on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, need gift ideas? The Holiday Gift Guide is something for everyone on your list as prices under $15, like a pair of Mechanics Wear black-coated winter gloves, a Power Torque 2-piece magnetic tool holder bar, a Slime digital tire gauge, and much more. Check out the Holiday Gift Guide for great ideas at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store or O'Reilly.com. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. That's awesome, a Slime digital tire gauge? That's fantastic. I keep thinking about me. I am terrible with tire pressure. I am awful.
I filled up my tire this morning.
Did you?
Well, because
yeah,
a little
indicator. When it's colder, right?
Yeah, when it gets a little colder, the indicator popped on, and I was like, I guess it's setting off a sensor. So I checked all the tires, and one of the tires needed a little bit of air.
I'm so glad my car tells me. It's like,
yeah.
You're low.
Oh, I wouldn't know 30, other than that.
Yeah, me either. I'd be like, it looks like it's low. I should go check it out.
Yep. So
anyway, there you go. O'Reilly gift ideas. All right, again, glad to be back after a week off for Thanksgiving. So I got to tell you something here. I'm going to share something with you.
Do it.
Saturday.
Just me, though. Don't share it with anybody else.
Just you. So here's what's happened. As I've gotten kind of older, like when I used to go on vacations, I used to be the travel home Sunday guy because I was always like, I'll just bounce back and go to work on Monday. I'll you know, why not have an extra day vacation? But as I've gotten older, I'm like, I just want to leave on Saturday so I could get home, have one day of doing nothing, you know, kind of unpacking, unwinding. So we went down to Florida. I spent time with my parents when my dad had surgery and my family came in for Thanksgiving. So we all left on Saturday to go back home. So on our way back, my wife and I decided not to go. Normal route is to go straight up 75 through Atlanta, through Chattanooga, up to Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and cross over into southern Nashville where we live. But we decided because of the holiday week, we didn't want to go through Atlanta. So we went through, we stopped off in Tifton, Georgia, and kind of took a back state road through Georgia and through a lot of Alabama. That's the key to this story. A lot of Alabama on state roads, all the way up to Birmingham where we caught the highway and went back up to Tennessee. And the reason I bring this up is because we went through, a million little towns in Alabama on the way. And we just happened to be doing that at the time the Iron Bowl was on. And I got to be honest with you, man. I have heard my whole life about how big the Iron Bowl is. And, you know, especially when you live in the South, you know, you got all these rivalries and everyone sort of compares. Everybody thinks their rivalry is the best. And then people say, yeah, I thought my rivalry was the best until I went to Alabama for the Iron Bowl or until I lived in Alabama and experienced people's passion for the Iron Bowl. I kid you not, Ron. We were driving on this major state road, not a highway, just a major state road, two lanes, still can go 70, 75. Nobody was on the road. Nobody was on the road. Occasionally, we would see other cars, and I would see license plates that say Tennessee. I'm not kidding. We had the whole roads. I was driving with no one around me. I didn't think the cops were out for the Iron Bowl. There was nothing on the roads as we were driving through Alabama.
At some point, did you start to think that maybe you were going the wrong way?
I thought maybe, yeah. And I remember telling my wife, I said, the Iron Bowl is going on right now. I said, everybody's at home watching this thing. I said, very few people are out. And so we're driving through little towns, looking at gas stations. Hardly anybody's getting gas. We're just cruising. And I had the pleasure of listening to the Auburn radio guys and then Alabama's radio guy, which is the legendary Eli Gold, who calls Alabama football. And I got to listen. I listened to the entire Iron Bowl on radio. I did the first half with the Auburn guys, and then I listened to Eli Gold. And it was incredible. I mean, incredible experience to listen to that game in overtime, the way they had the 97-yard touchdown drive at the end, to listen to Eli and his crew, because he had two guys in the booth with him, the way they were describing that, the way they were talking about John Michi's touchdown that gave him the win and all of that, to drive through Alabama for 4 hours and listen to the Iron Bowl with both Auburn and Alabama. My wife, it's just, she was listening to something on her headphones. To her, the moment didn't mean a thing. To me, I thought it was one of the better moments of my career to have experienced that, to listen to that game in that state, to see the state on Iron Bowl Saturday, like nothing going down. Like everybody, wherever they were, everyone was watching the game. It was great because I've driven that road many times on the way back and forth from Florida. It's usually crowded, usually run into something. But boy, I tell you right now, it was like a tomb. It was like Walking Dead at one point. I was like, there's nobody here. Like, there's nobody here. Like, nobody is on this road.
I've had that happen. It is freaky.
It really is. You wonder, like, what's going on?
Did you miss a road sign somewhere back there that said, don't drive on this road? And then you start to sit there and go, man, maybe I'll just drive down the middle of the highway because I can.
Maybe the highway was like, it hasn't been built yet, and you just run into a cliff.
You just run off the bridge. You're like, it's completed on the map. That's not completed.
He missed the detour sign on the way over. Yeah. I mean, it was nobody there. It was quite remarkable.
So I experienced that once when I first moved to Texas. We were just taking in some of the sights of Houston, just driving around. And it happened to be like opening day of the NFL. And it was out just, you know, cruising with the wife and kids. And the Texans were playing. And we stumbled upon it was a major highway, just like you said. I mean, And literally it was just our car and truckers. That was it.
That's it.
And it, just, and it took us all a second. We're looking around like, you know, what is going on? And I was like, you know, I looked at the time and I was like, yeah, it's, you know, the Texans are playing.
Now, no one's out. Now, listen, I will tell you this. This happens at a lot of schools, so it's not just an Alabama or Auburn thing. But because we listen to the Florida game, too. Like, on our way up, yeah, we listen to the Florida State
game. I guarantee
game.
You would have found the same thing, like, if you were cruising around between Cleveland and Columbus.
Yeah, sure. You know, exactly.
It
right?
would have been empty.
Absolutely.
Or anywhere
absolutely.
In Ohio, for that matter.
By the way, that game, my wife wanted me to stream on my phone when we lost radio range.
Nice.
Yeah, we had to stream that. Alabama-Auburn, she couldn't care less.
Yeah.
But what's really fun to listen to these college broadcasts is, and again, listen, it's not a Southern thing. It happens everywhere. They usually have the play-by-play guy, and he's hired by the school, so he's a homer. But then they usually have two guys or one guy that is played for the school or yep. somehow major league, and he is a wee guy, right? He's the play-by-play guy may not say we need a touchdown or we got a break or whatever. He may keep it a little bit more neutral, but the guy next to him is usually the guy that goes, "We're not playing very good right now. We really need to step it up on defense," and. That was fun to listen to the two sides because the Alabama guys I thought were going to cry. Like they were really struggling to hold it together while Auburn was, you know, had the upper hand in that game for most of that game. Right. I mean, there was, remember in 2013 with the kick six that destroyed Alabama's chance to go to they did not play for the SEC title. They did not play for the national championship. This had that same feeling. This had, for so much of that game, this had that same feeling. Like, Auburn is going to win this game, and that's it for Alabama. That's it. They're not getting in with two losses even if they beat Georgia. Even if they beat this incredible Georgia team, they're not going to go to the playoff. Auburn is going to keep them out of this playoff. And then to see the turnaround as they got the touchdown – and as Alabama was, you know, they're trading back and forth in overtime. And then Alabama pulled it out. The relief, you could feel the relief on these guys in the broadcast booth. It was quite remarkable.
Well, that's the, you know, the flip side of that is all the video coming out of. There was one video I watched where you just see a bunch of Auburn students taken to the street. What's that grove again?
Tumors Corner.
Tumors Corner.
Yeah.
Just taken to the corner and just celebrating. Celebrating because they, you know, they won the game.
Yeah,
and then it's like, you know, then it's almost like a SpongeBob interlude, like, you know, 5 minutes later.
Yeah, right.
Just, you know, everyone just crying.
I know. It's so. That's one of the things about college football, and to just make a larger point on this, you know what? I have come around to expanding this playoff thing a little bit. I have, but man, to those moments like Michigan, Ohio State, right? Where Michigan not only wins, but they keep Ohio State. They give Ohio State that dreaded second loss that's keeping them out of the playoff. Those are those moments that matter so much in these rivalry games. This is the thing I was trying to express to my son who gave up on the Florida season. They had lost to Missouri. Dan Mullen was fired. And I said, you don't give up on the rivalry game. The rivalry game is a second game. It's a secondary thing. It matters because it's the game. It doesn't matter what your record is. But in these circumstances where the record does matter, this is where you're getting your rival's best shot. They are coming at you with everything because they not only need to win, they need to destroy your season. And it almost happened to Alabama. It did happen to Ohio State, right? It just takes the – it sucks it right out. And I can't imagine – what Ohio State had done to Michigan State, right? What they did to Michigan State, I thought they were the national champs. College football.
And I thought for certain there was no chance for Michigan.
None.
And you just watch that game and you're sitting there and like you keep looking at the scores like, okay, I don't even understand what's happening right now.
I couldn't believe it. And then to see Michigan, to see what that score was, getting updates in the various games I was listening to on the way Saturday, I was like blown away that Jim Harbaugh had done that to Ohio State. A long time coming for Harbaugh to get that win. But it's one of the most important victories in Michigan football history because that team, Ohio State, looked like they were ready to beat the world en route to a national title. All right, coming up, more on the college football with Lincoln Riley and Billy Napier leaving for bigger jobs as we continue along with Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the
Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
We'll get back into the NFL after Sunday's games and kind of piggyback him on to what happened Thursday to get a more of a complete picture of Week 12. Of course, we got the Monday night game, Seattle and Washington tonight. But for the most part, where do we stand in the postseason? But yesterday was some pretty big news coming out of Norman as Lincoln Riley announced that he is leaving the Sooners to take the job at USC. And there's been obviously a little bit of fun, if you will. I'm going to put fun in quotes here because Lincoln Riley was asked about rumors and his post-game press conference and their loss to Oklahoma State. And one reporter kind of brought it up. You know, there's all these rumors and they're heating up. And he said, I'll stop you right there. I'm not going to be the head coach at LSU, which is technically not a lie. Then he went on to the next question. And then the next day he took the job at USC. He becomes the head coach of the Trojans. Billy Napier is leaving Louisiana, the school in the Sun Belt. They play in Lafayette, Louisiana. They're the Ragin' Cajuns, to be the new head coach at Florida. This is the guy I told Florida to get because I wanted him in South Carolina, and instead they went with Shane Beamer, who I'm happy with, but I've always been a Billy Napier guy. I'm glad Florida's going to like him. I really believe in Billy Napier, but Lincoln Riley's the big story, is the bigger story. Because Billy Napier going to Florida or wherever was going to happen. He was a too hot of a commodity to be sitting on the sidelines in the Sun Belt. He was going somewhere. It just happened to be Florida had fired Dan Mullen the week before and was looking for a guy, and they get him. I didn't think he was going to get the job at LSU. LSU seems to be looking for a more experienced Power 5 coach. But Napier, I think, is going to do fine in Florida. But nevertheless, the big story is Lincoln Riley. Now, let me make something clear about this move. I have not been happy with the thought that Lincoln Riley doesn't want to go to the SEC. And what I mean by that is two things. One, he did not want to take a job at Florida or LSU. And Oklahoma is going to the SEC at some point. So there's been a lot of sort of social media chatter that this move by Riley to the Pac-12 is because it's an easier conference. He's going to a large talent pool where he's a good recruiter. He's been very successful at Oklahoma in recruiting nationally. He should be able to do that, but especially recruit Los Angeles really well. But the idea that because he wasn't a real candidate for the LSU job, he wasn't a real candidate for the Florida job, that in the end, and because Oklahoma was going to the SEC and he didn't stay there, that he was afraid of SEC competition, right? You're hearing this a lot. You know, why bang your head against the wall against Georgia and Alabama and all these other schools and Lane Kiffin and all these other schools when you could go to the Pac-12 and it's a much easier haul? I'm going to be really careful with that because I'm not in Lincoln Riley's head. And I don't think it's fair to take that sort of analysis out of this decision. He is not leaving Oklahoma for Utah. He is not leaving Oklahoma for Oregon State. He is not leaving Oklahoma for Arizona State. He is leaving for USC. That is one of the premier college football jobs in the country. It's one of the premier jobs in the country in the sports world. You're talking about Southern California, Los Angeles. You're talking about the talent pool that is there that is ripe with, major talent that he can recruit from and keep in that area. And it is the Pac-12. It is not the SEC. But the last time I checked, you do well in the Pac-12. They do invite you to this thing called the playoff. Now, is it an easier road? Yeah, but he still has work to do there. But I will tell you this. I don't know if he was afraid of the SEC competition. I don't like putting that on him. He was a young guy when he got to Oklahoma, and he wasn't afraid of the Big 12 competition. And the Big 12 competition when he got there was pretty good. But what I would say is, strategically, career-wise, it's a very good move. He's 39 years old. He's one of the premier coaches in the game. Right, you list the major coaches in college football right now. He's on that list. In 5 years, he took Oklahoma to the playoffs 3 times. He's won 3 Big 12 titles while he's there. He will not win it this year, but he had a very good chance of winning it this year, even with his team playing as sort of up and down and kind of sloppy the way they kind of performed this season. But I will tell you about the SEC. You can't lose. You can't lose ever. And it makes it really hard. Now, USC is kind of in that same boat, but think how long they gave Clay Helton to figure this out, right? They only got rid of Steve Sarkisian because of off-the-field issues, right? They really didn't want to fire Lane Kiffin, but they finally had to because of the pressure. But it's not the SEC. And all you have to do is take a look at what happened to Dan Mullen at Florida as a perfect example of that. Dan Mullen was at Florida for four seasons. Four. Last year, COVID, change at quarterback against Kentucky midway through the season. Kyle Trask emerged as a Heisman candidate under Dan Mullen's tutelage once he took over that starting job for Felipe Franks, who got hurt. The Gators played a competitive game against Alabama, and not just an Alabama team last year, a very good, one of Nick Saban's best Alabama teams last year. Played a very competitive game against them. Very competitive. Now, if you listen to diehard Gator fans, they tell you they should have won that game. But I don't think they should have won that game. But they were very, very, they played very, very well. Dan Mullen had a lot of opt-outs in their bowl matchup. Lost the bowl matchup. But went into this season with a team that once again played really well against Alabama. But then started to fall apart. And they fell apart at the quarterback position. They didn't have a lot of depth there after Kyle Trask left. What happened? He's gone. Last year's run at the SEC championship didn't matter. It was irrelevant. He didn't like recruiting. And in the SEC, you got to love recruiting. There's no other way around it. You've got to love recruiting. You got to love it. You got to love going into 18-year-old kids' homes, 17-year-old kids' homes, even 16-year-old kids' homes, and give them the world. And sell yourself to them. You gotta love it. And the people around you better love it too. In the SEC, it's a big deal. Again, it's a big deal in a lot of places. The SEC, it's a major deal. Remember what I used to talk about all the time about how it's gotten so crazy, the recruiting has gotten so crazy that, you know, back in the day, reporters used to just sort of hang around. Bear Bryant would come out of his Alabama office, talk about his recruiting class, and as a reporter, you just sort of kind of took his word for it. Outside of local kids in the state, if he told you he got a great kid named Joe Namath from Pennsylvania, you just kind of went, I guess he's going to be good because coach said so. Sure enough, he was. But nevertheless, coach would just tell you got a good recruiting class and you'd wait to see it perform on the field before you judge it. Now, with all of these publications, with all of these people ranking your recruiting classes and grading your recruiting classes to others in your area, your state, your rivals, in conference, in divisions, you better win that war because your boosters want you to win that war. Now, Dan Mullen admitted many times he didn't really care for recruiting. And that was starting to do him in. So when you couple with that with loss after loss after loss, with a team that wasn't as well prepared, the fact that he doesn't really dig recruiting, everybody in the SEC looked around and said, why is Florida keeping him? And then Florida said, oh, no, just kidding. We're not. Right? Because that's the way it goes. Now, if I'm Lincoln Riley and I see that, and I'm 39, and I had taken Oklahoma, one of the other premier college programs in the country, to three college football players. Do you think I'm going to get derailed by some boosters because they didn't like my recruiting class? Right? If I'm Lincoln Riley, do I want to swim in that pool? I do not. Now, I will go to USC. There's pressure at USC. There's no question about it. I don't think that the people in Southern California and the LA boosters, which there are many and there are powerful many, are going to sit back and let Lincoln Riley just sort of ho-hum his way through the Pac-12. That's not what I'm saying. But there is an irrationality that happens sometimes in the Southeastern Conference that conference better start figuring out, or its fan base better start figuring out, because you cannot keep kicking college coaches out the door all the time and expecting the next one to be just as good. Right? I mean, I've seen it happen time and time again where schools have to fire, and it is a long, long, long drought, and then they start reliving the good old days. This is the fourth coach that Florida has hired since Urban Meyer left. Right? And that wasn't that long ago. And they've gone through these guys that, you know, go out there and they do really well, then they don't have good seasons, and then they're on the hot seat, then they're on some pressure, and before you know it, they're canned. And here comes the next guy, and he comes in promising great things, and then he gets canned, and the next guy gets canned, and the next guy gets canned. Right? Gus Malzahn got canned. He took Auburn to the championship game a couple of years ago against Florida State. He got canned. Right? And I know Ed Orgeron lost his job because of off-the-field issues, no question about it, but the on-field product, the beginning of the season, didn't help, and he was 2 years removed from a national title. If you're Billy Napier, you're watching that, and you're going, look, I am not going to be a has-been in my sport. I'm not going to be fired by some SEC boosters because in year three I didn't win a national title. Because he doesn't have to win a national title in year three at USC. But he better start putting that program back on the national map. That is why he's hired. But they gave Clay Helton every opportunity to turn that program around. And I think Lincoln Riley gets even longer because of who he is. He's Lincoln Riley, for crying out loud. Now, again, Billy Napier, he makes the jump, no problem. That's bound to happen. He would have gone anywhere. Get out of the Sun Belt. Sun Belt's fine, but it served its purpose for him. He was an assistant under Dabo Swinney. He was an assistant under Nick Saban. He went to Arizona State, was up for that job, but they gave it to Herm Edwards. He goes to Louisiana because he's got to get head coaching experience. And in 4 years, he had Louisiana in the national polls, for crying out loud.
Nah, basically what he did was he took that job at, you know, the small business to get, you know, noticed by the large corporation.
That's right.
It happens
all
the time.
Right. Exactly.
Why should we think football's any different?
Right. So, and by the way, Malachi Nelson, the five-star recruit that committed to Oklahoma because of Lincoln Riley, he's leaving. He's not going there now. He's now back open with his choices. Oh, I love it. That's like the first thing the kids do. They hear the news and they go, yeah, about that going to Oklahoma. Nah, I'm not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
You know why? Because that guy was in my parents' home, and now he's not around anymore. I don't know who you're going to hire. I may not like him. I'm not committing. So, bye.
That was quick.
That was quick is right. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two. We've got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up in the next hour. We have had no good, the bad, and the dumb for a week. Or at least I have it. You might have done it while I was gone in the 2 days that you worked. Nope. No? And then Matt Michelle is going to join us in hour two. We're going to talk about all this college football stuff, including the rivalry games and how it's shaking up, and Cincinnati better beat Houston if they want to keep their dream alive. That's all coming up in hour number two as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call, and this hour of Wake Up Call is presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. By the way, staying in the college football realm, I will have to say that was an impressive fan turnout on the field after Michigan beat Ohio State. How they stormed in Ann Arbor. 111,000 people at the Big House. That's got to be on my bucket list, I think. I think I wouldn't mind going to see
it. Yeah. I don't know if I'd want to storm the field.
I don't know if I want to storm the field either. It's amazing. It's almost like when they do that, they just go, you know what? We just hope nobody gets hurt.
Yep.
Like when this is all said and done, we hope nobody gets hurt.
Hopefully everyone storms in an orderly matter.
Right.
You know, or manner.
Sneak a few punches at somebody, yep, or everything. I always got to think that it's like petrifying for opposing players.
Oh, it's got to be. I mean, it's
like you're trying to get off the field. You're trying to get to that locker room. You're trying to get to safety.
I mean, think about it.
Security
one
to
video,
get everybody there.
That one video of Texas A&M when Texas A&M beat Alabama.
Right.
And you saw the one girl like on the field and a security or police officer just trucked her.
Right.
To get
remember
Nick
that,
Saban
yeah.
off the field, because you have to imagine, like, you know, so, yeah, some of the football players, they're recognizable, but they're fully padded. Nick Saban is a recognized figure.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it'd be easy if he was running off the field by himself, it'd be easy for a Texas A&M guy to take a shot.
Mike Krzyzewski used to always comment on this because he's, you know, he knows that everywhere they go on the road, whenever it doesn't matter who beats them, the people storm the court. And he's like, my players are just unprotected out there. Like, they're just basketball players. The buzzer sounds. And then next thing you know, there's swarms and swarms of kids.
In an instant.
In an instant. And they're of the opposing team. And they've got to, and they got to find their way to the locker room. And they've got all these people poking at them and shoving them and you know, who knows what. So, but it's still a pretty impressive sight when you see it. God, Harbaugh just saved himself 7 years of agony. I can't think of another coach under that much pressure to win a game than Harbaugh was to win that game at Ohio State. With that team, as good as that team was, he's got to be like, we ain't going to beat him now.
Is that like extension worthy as well?
Yeah,
that was the one thing.
Right?
The first thought I went through my mind was like, okay, you finally did it. I mean, that's, we've been saying it all along. He can lose every single regular season game, but if he beats Michigan once, that's all that matters. That's all
right.
He cares about.
If he gets that win, especially the way they got it,
and like you said earlier in the show, this one means more too.
It kicked him out of the playoffs.
Kicked him out of the playoffs. They're done. They're toast.
That's it. You liked them against Michigan State, how impressive they were. Well, you're not going to see them later this year when they compete in the 4-team playoffs. So long.
There's only room for one 2-loss team.
That's
I know
it.
You'll get into that later.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Again, we got good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next hour as we continue at SportsMap Radio on